Verbal shenanigans we will do tonight with me and you. Doug Cosmo Clifford here, just having a little fun.
But our shenanigans are cheeky and fun.
Yeah, I mean, his shenanigans are cruel and tragic.
Which makes them not shenanigans at all, really.
Evil shenanigans.
I swear to God, I'll pistol whip the next guy that says shenanigans.
Hey, what's up there, everybody? This is Scott, and that is Mike. Mike, hello.
Evening, and salutations from Georgia, Scotty.
Absolutely. Guys, this is the Verbal Shenanigans Podcast, a weekly dive into life. Talking about interesting guests, or talking to interesting guests. It'd be funny if the show was talking about interesting guests.
You know who would be great to interview?
Steve Jobs would be amazing, yeah. Scott. Yeah, that would be great. Let's talk about how we would have talked to Steve Jobs for an hour.
So if you were just tuning in, we are a weekly podcast, like I'm sure you every other podcast is. But we've been doing this for about 6 years and whatnot, and we've been doing the bi-weekly thing now since the pandemic has hit. And it's been going good. We have a backlog of guests. Berlo, we're coming off just what I would call truly amazing Facebook Live we did yesterday.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that, everything was hitting its marks. I remember in the meeting you were telling me, all right, let's make it look like we tried this six times before we get it right.
Right.
I'm like, I don't know. That doesn't seem right. And then you're like, you got to dedicate yourself to the art, man.
Yeah, and I was like, look, first I want to put up like three or four videos of just my face staring into the screen and trying to figure it out. And then after that, we could start to incorporate you, mess it up a few times, and throw the word test in there like 6 to 7 times. And that's what I was really going for, that real raw approach.
Yeah, you liked how I improv and I put in comment stuff, and you're like, oh, it's Berlo, but I don't know how to get him.
Yeah. You would think it was, I don't know, I guess, I don't know. Maybe it's because it's like our fan page, kind of, like it makes it a little more difficult. But you would think it's just easy to go Facebook Live, boom, put Berlo up in the screen, and we banter a little bit because I wanted to put out maybe a little bit more content during this whole thing because, hey, we're home. We're not really doing much.
Nope.
I mean, Berlo was done with his living room laps, and I was done being banished into the small room because now the baby's room is taking over the house and whatnot. But we figured we'd put some more content out, and it did not go so smoothly yesterday. But we're going to do it. We're going to do little mini things or things that might come up to me during the day. I'm just going to be like, Berlo, get on the phone right now. We're gonna drop some little live videos on you here and there. But it did not go well the first time. And then two of the interviews we did tonight, which some of these interviews, guys, we pierce a peek behind the curtain. We record prior to doing our amazing banter. And we had a lot of technical difficulties that we haven't had in, I'm going to say it's been a while, 6 months since we've had any major like technical problems where like there's delay and Skype's dropping out and video's not working and phones skipping and I don't know.
Yep. My side was beatboxing as it was back in the early days.
Yes.
I couldn't see you, so we had weird pauses here and there. It got to the point we just said F it and we got on cell phones to finish off the second interview. So,
we did it.
Yep. I blame all you people who have to use the internet during the pandemic. You're supposed to be reading books, as we tell our children. I mean, if you want to be smart, you read like pieces of physical paper with letters on it versus this going on the YouTubes.
So, Berlo, let's check in. It's quarantine cast like number 7 or 8 or something like that. Are you still clean? Are you infected?
No signs that I am infected. Knowing my body, who knows what's in there, but so far so good.
Yep.
I'm just keeping the pace, if you will.
All right. Now, we are clean here too, thank God. We're getting by. I gotta say, had a little bit of a the walls are caving in kind of day yesterday. I was really feeling the I need to do something or go to work or talk to somebody else besides this person that's in my room, you know, aka my wife. No, but actually, I actually got to say, the wife husband relationship has been very good. I would give it like 8.5 out of 10 over the month of quarantine we've been in.
Ooh,
yeah.
So what's docking the 1.5? Out of curiosity.
So I would say like if you were taking like a 10, right? 10s don't really exist. Like there's if your relationship is a 10 at all times, I have a feeling someone's lying. There's something, someone's hiding something and acting towards the other because you're naturally going to fight and bicker and things like that. And I think my wife and I are very similar in the fact that like we'll have a fight and it'll hash out. Like it'll be like, you're this, and like we get heated. And then, like, the next morning or an hour or two later, it's like, hey, what do you want to watch? You know, like, it's just, like, we don't harp on things, which is good. Okay. I don't know how you guys are with your fights. Are you, like, quick to get over it, or is it, like, a hold it kind of thing?
I would probably say we're pretty good at smashing it. I mean, I think I can only name, like, one fight in our history where it's, like, I went into another room and, like, stayed there and I didn't want to talk to her. And
killed animals and stuff.
I mean, no, that's how we make up. It's like, babe, it's cool. I love you. Let's go get some squirrels.
Let's do the sacrificial raccoon slaughtering to make up as a sign of our peace.
Yeah, as it says in the Georgia Constitution, as you have to do.
Right.
But, I mean, I would say we're pretty good. Once in a blue moon, the wifey likes to linger on something. That's just her personality. I'm not knocking her for stuff. I'm just like kind of a yeah, whatever, and it goes by me where it's a little less emotional. She's a little more emotional, not in a bad sense where it's like everything is continuing because of this, but I mean, we're still in the house. We still go in the same bed, and we're still like, "All right, see you in the morning."
Yeah. So, where would you put your quarantine number at? Where are you guys at? Your peace number, 10 being perfect, 1 being your she's not going to wake up tomorrow.
I'd probably rank in the same range. I would say we've had in our bad quarantine days, we haven't taken it out on each other. I would say would be the best thing. I think last week I had some pretty decent. I can't even think of doing anything. Like even it affected me like a little bit work wise, where it's like, you know, you're in front of a computer. I'm like, I don't want to really do anything today.
Yeah. I think the motivation factor is tough, and I'm a guy, I mean, you know me for a while, I try to, like, stay very busy. Like, I try as hard as I can to, like, whether it's yard work or painting or comedy, whatever it is, I try to stay very busy, whether it's the cast or whatnot. And these last couple of days have been trying, man, because I'm like, yeah, today I'll rearrange the basement from the comedy show. And that's like a 4.5-minute task that I just don't feel like doing. Like, it's just the tasks aren't giving me the, like, there's not a task that I'm like, oh, that's awesome. Like, I really want to do that. They're like, okay, you're going to move the couch around and throw some wash in and put things back. Like, that's not really like a day, you know? It's like, meh. I don't know.
Yeah, we got to think of something like writing a play or a novel. That will take up some chunks of time, or at least it should, but as most writers, we'll probably stare at a piece of paper for 6 hours and screw this.
I do have this idea for a book that I've been talking about for years that I said, actually this morning, it's funny you said that, I was like, you know, if we did 500 words a day, which is not even asking for that much, right? If I did 500 words a day, it would at least be able to get to like the treatment stage where you could present it to someone like, here's my idea. But of course, it's like a, you know, it's like a mountain, you know, you're just like, oh, well, I'll watch this. I'll watch that. I haven't been watching that much TV, but I will tell you, and here's a little shout out to one of our former guests. I went through a Pete Corielli wormhole the other day, this morning. His specials are all on Prime, like three of them, so over the years. And I watched like two and a half of them and just kind of vegged out. And hilarious, man. That guy should be the same level as Sebastian Maniscalco. I know they do a podcast together, fantastic podcast. But Pete Corielli, phenomenal. One of my favorite guests we've ever had on this show. But
see, that sounds awesome. I always have the TV on while I'm working, but I'm not paying attention. I found myself, if I watch something too much, as in like reruns, I just figure out the pattern of the show, and then instantly I lose all interest in it.
Right.
The second I see, okay, the opening joke, everybody laughs, then it's the wacky theme song, and then it's like, oh, the family's doing something. Oh, one of the family members is doing something that the main character doesn't like. Oh, the main character is having a wacky conversation with the neighbor.
So you don't have like a show that you just like is your go-to, you could watch over and over and over again?
I do, but it can turn super fast.
Interesting.
And it, like I said, it's just one of those, if I'm just chiming there and all of a sudden like, okay, I literally figured out it's ABCBA, then instantly, like the next episode comes on, I'm like ABCBA, next one ABCBA, over.
See, like Always Sunny, I could still put on and just like watch an episode and enjoy it. Like it's kind of like my relaxing show.
I can watch them because they do different things, and even I applaud them when they have a bad episode. Okay, they tried something. It's kind of like Seinfeld when they did the backwards episode. I thought that was a horrible episode. But in the end, I'm like, all right, he tried something out. They've done so many shows of just pulling nothing out of the air and making gold. I can sit back and say, you went on an adventure. It didn't work. Thank you for the attack.
It's like when a popular band puts out like their third album. Because the second album is always like them trying to redo the first album or like that same vibe. Mm. And they do really well with it. And then the third album is always like, we got to recreate ourselves. And everyone's like, yeah, you know, like, well, go back to the old stuff. And then they come back and everyone's like, oh, the Burloo band sounds like Burloo again. You know, like they go back to it, you know?
Yeah, it's always, they do that weird thing in the third one where it's just like, no, I think a tuba would work for Metallica. I really think we're going a little too far. No, I'm telling you, man, when we drop this, everybody talk about the tuba, and then
obey your bop, bop, bop. Quarantine is. I'm doing okay. I'm trying to do. I am doing. I guess like daily lists, which helped me like at least put a couple things on a piece of paper, like try to do like a checklist of some sort. And that does help because it's like, well, you said you would do this, and this, and it does help. But again, it's like, it's almost like, well, like they just announced New Jersey, like everything's, a lot of things are probably gonna be shut down on May 15th. And it's like, well, that's another month when you really think about it. It's another month. Mm-hmm. And it's like, well, like, my house should be immaculate, you know, and it's not, you know, there's still things that, you know, I look at, I'm like, damn it, I didn't pick that up or put that away or what, you know, like blah, 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 like that should get, but then you realize like to do things like also costs money and trips to the store and things start piling up and you start to become like a prisoner in a way, you're just kind of comfortable with your environment. You're like, this is fine. You know, this is okay.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, I think what's tough for me is even though I don't have like the drive right now, as in like driving into work, I feel it just, I still fit the same pattern. It's like, all right, instead of driving, I'm sleeping that extra hour, but it's still like I'm getting ready. And immediately when I'm done, like with getting up, changing, eating, shower, head downstairs immediately, get online because my shift started like literally a minute ago. And then I can't really move from the computer because, you know, that's the thing about IT. The second you move from the computer, somebody chimes you, and then it goes to the supervisor. Then it's like, you lazy, no good.
Yeah.
It doesn't really matter. So, but I will tell you a little side note story that you might get entertained by. So I always tend to drink like a lot of water, iced tea and stuff like that during the day. And the wife actually, like, she's in the bedroom doing her work and all. And she's like, man, you always coming up here going to the bathroom. I'm like, it's fine. I just drink all day. So, but so I had a conference call with my boss and a couple other people. And we're about 40 minutes in. There's still another 20 minutes to go. And we're actually going through stuff. So I can't just like put the headset down and go.
Right.
So bladder was telling me it couldn't wait anymore.
Yes.
Had an iced tea can.
All right.
So I was peeing during my conference call.
Peeing during the Zoom.
Yep. I was had to adjust myself. So I'm hitting right in the middle of the opening of the Arizona iced tea can.
It's a good can, though.
And it was the double size one, the 99-cent one.
That a boy. Yep, that'll get you through two if you have to. You know.
Well, funny you should say that. first set was probably about, I'd say half, maybe three quarters. Then it's like, oh, this is still going, and I gotta go. So I went and I had to shut it down for a little bit because it was coming to the end. I'm like, all right, enough. I got to bring this thing upstairs and pour it in the toilet. So I can't have it overflowing here.
I will tell you, Berlo, I have done that during this podcast. Not this one particularly, but during an episode of the podcast, I have peed right in a container because we were interviewing someone. I don't remember who, but I remember being like, well, there's a container there, and like I don't want to miss this. You know, like, and I was like, well, you're not going to hear it.
Out of curiosity, were you like looking at me through the video while you were performing this task?
No, I mean, I wouldn't look right in the eye. I would just kind of do like this, you know, like kind of
burp, 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 burp.
Yeah, just looking around, like inconspicuous. You've got to sell it, you know. You know. I would tell you, I've done that a million times driving. I used to have the best pee bottle. I will tell you right now. The best pee bottle is a window washer fluid bottle. It's big, it's gigantic, and it has a really wide base. So, you know, you could, not that I need a very wide base, but you're able to place it in there with no problem. You're not worried about spillage all over the place. Mm-hmm. And that is by far the best one if you're ever stuck in traffic and whatnot. So keep it under the seat, you know, and you're okay.
I'm thinking Powerade bottle is the best one.
Powerade's good.
I think got big opening right there. It's a decent size. If you're doing one and done, you're going to be all right with that. I mean, maybe one and a half.
See, that's the thing. It's a great one and done bottle, but a window washer bottle, you could do like five, six, maybe seven in there if you had to.
I've never been in that many situations where I'm stuck and I had to go seven times in one bottle, I gotta say.
Well, you've never lived before. You've never lived until you fill a window washer bottle.
I've been in some bad traffic, but I'll still find bushes in that scenario.
That's the worst feeling, man. That is the worst feeling. Like, you got nowhere to go and you're just stuck and you gotta figure out solutions, man. I have a friend who went to, and no bottles in his thing, and he was outside the Lincoln Tunnel and he was like, you know what? And he threw down like an old shirt and a towel into the passenger and just peed onto the floor of his car.
I can't fathom that logic worked. I got a feeling there was pee all over in that scenario.
But what do you do? What do you do in that case?
I would just like slightly ajar, open the car door. Maybe have like a towel. Like
wait. So you would hang it out the door while driving, so you would just swing it out the door. Wait. Yeah.
So I thought he was just like in bumper to bumper traffic. Is this what we're talking about?
Well, he's outside the Lincoln Tunnel, so it's just creeping. You know what I mean? It's just kind of an inch or two at a time, so it's moving slightly. and no bottles, no anything to do. What do? You would go out the door?
I would probably like put on my emergencies, act like, you know, guy in front of me's not moving, and then just
wow. You know,
try to get as much possible out where I can hold it by going forward.
I respect the boldness. That's a bold move. Like, that's really, because immediately, you know, it, in that area, you'd be like people would be honking at you, throwing stuff at you and cursing at you, like, put it away, big guy. Yeah, like,
well, I'm not going to pee on a towel on my passenger side. That's ludicrous.
I didn't say, I did not say his solution was the best thing ever, but I have also been in desperate times where it's just like, you got to figure something out quick, and there's not, you're not really thinking at that point. You're just kind of, I got to go. Like, that's it.
Yeah, but, well, that's why I bank on opening the door. It's not going to be in my car, and the only thing I'm going to insult is the guy behind me.
It'd be great if, like, you opened the door, you did your thing, and then you closed it and closed yourself into the car door.
What seems to be the problem here? Nothing, but if you want to talk, just open the door for a minute.
Please! Arrest me, please. Well, Burlo. I mean, I don't know if there's ever been a more natural segue, because that's what we do here. It's funny. Yeah. It's funny. Sometimes, like, I describe this podcast to, like, guests, you know, like, hey, well, what do you do? Well, you know, we talk about life, and you know, we talk about peeing in bottles, and then segue to a member of, you know, possibly one of the greatest American bands of all time. I am extremely excited about this next guest here.
Has this guy done anything of note that we should be aware of?
No, not really. It's actually just like my neighbor. I just grabbed him off the street, but it means I don't have to really talk to you for the next 30 minutes.
That makes sense. That makes sense.
But there's very few times, actually a lot of times on this podcast, but there's very few times in life where you're like, holy crap, moments, and wow, like, you know, and like sometimes people are in household names or whatnot, but when you think of, like, Howard Berger 2 weeks ago, right? It was one of those interviews for me where I'm like, damn, this guy's done everything, like so many iconic things that you've probably like watched with your friends and you've watched with your family or you've watched on your own. You're like, oh crap, look at all these special effects and whatnot. And he's done everything. Like, I know for you, like The Walking Dead was really big at one point, you know, and he's done a bunch of that. And the Freddy movies were really, you know, and he did a bunch of that. So it was like, and then I love a lot of those Tarantino films. And then it was endless over and over and over again. And so here's an example. Like, we've interviewed musicians before that have meant a lot to me, like the guys from Coheed and Cambria. That's a band I listen to daily. The guys from Thrice. We've had icons like Bobby Rush on, who was still one of the funniest interviews we've ever done.
Oh, easy.
Who just won a Grammy this year. Amazing. We've had several. We got to make a list of Grammy winners we've had on the show. Howard Berger won the Oscar.
I think off the top of my head, I think we have four.
Hmm.
Victor Wooten.
Yep.
Bobby Rush.
Yep.
Stu Cook.
Yep.
And I'm going to have to look it up. I'm not sure if they got one.
I don't know.
No, they didn't. I actually looked that up. Creedence never did. Oh, Fogerty did.
Yeah, but no Stu. No Stu. And our next guest. So Creedence Clearwater, I don't try to say, I got to interview Stu Cook, the bass player from Creedence, about a year and a half ago, maybe a year ago. Mike, you had a scheduling conflict, you know, basically long story short.
It was in the morning when I was going to work, and even though I was planning on doing it, I came out to see that my car had a flat tire. Right. So
I interviewed Stu solo, and it was a really great moment, really good guest. And so basically, I stayed in contact with the same woman, and she was able to put us in touch with Doug Cosmo Clifford, who is the drummer of Creedence, Creedence Revisited, the Don Harrison Band, and now he has a new album that he found, well, a new old album. He found it. He found the masters from 1985. It's called Magic Window. But we're going to get to talk to Doug today, or Cosmo, if you will. And just an iconic musician. Berlo, I was talking to you before we started this. You know, 53 years this guy's music has been in people's living rooms and stereos and whatnot. And, I mean, you think of... You can probably think of four Creedence songs right now and sing the words to them. And, you know, it's amazing. So I don't want to keep going. Let's let Doug get into this. Let's talk about his new album. So let's get Doug Cosmo Clifford on the line. So, Doug, first off, thank you so much for giving us a few minutes here. And, you know, really appreciate the time. Where are we calling you at? Where are you living these days?
Right now I'm in Scottsdale, Arizona.
Okay. So what's, give us the pandemic scene there. We're in Jersey and Georgia, and it's kind of two separate ways people are handling this thing. How are they handling it by you?
Well, of course, you know, we've been under order to stay put and abide by all the rules that most of us are. So yeah, doing whatever we can, and also putting out a nice a new bunch of songs.
That's it. I know.
With a positive message and some things to help get you through the night, so to speak. To quote John Lennon.
for sure. So. That's kind of how I, you know, I got an alert about your new album. Oh, I guess it's kind of a new old album, I guess, if you will.
Right.
Let's talk about that. Was your intention to release that before all this happened, or did this coincide? Did you decide to, like, how did you come up with the idea of kind of putting this back out?
Well, the album was recorded in mid 80s.
Yep.
And I found it and along with several other master reels and kind of, you know, forgot the stuff was in the locker. Thank God I restored it in a proper place. And you know, it was a project that I was trying to back in the day get traction on. And then I got involved in a very, very severe drought in Lake Tahoe, 7-year drought, and created a lot of problems, particularly fire danger, so on and so forth. So I didn't have a band. The two guys that I worked with on the project were independent agents, so I didn't have to the responsibility of trying to, you know, launch a band. I did that a lot during the post-Creedence days. Just obviously all songs that I had written or co-written. So it was kind of a publisher's jamboree, so to speak. So I forgot about that, and a lot happened. And I got involved in the Neighbors for a Defensible Space program and created that thing. And it was the number one project in the nation of its kind. So I got involved with all that. Government aides were coming up and inspecting what we were doing. And it was probably the best thing I ever did as a citizen. I was awarded the Citizen of the Year in 1991 by the Department of it wasn't the Department, gosh, a Chamber of Commerce in my town. But I was the only guy to get that award and not be a member of the Chamber of Commerce. I was a rock and roll drummer that had a biological background, and I put it to good use.
Nice.
That's amazing. So, I mean, when you come across all this music, for what I read of you updated a little bit. Like, how crisp was it, or how much was there needed to be changed? Was it just to update it in ways you maybe couldn't do in 85, or were you just intrigued about spicing it up a little bit, for lack of a better term?
Well, you know, I listened, and you know, obviously the memory kind of started clicking, and there were parts, you know, in the some of the songs that I thought needed editing, so I got the Pro Tools out and chop, so to speak.
Right.
And my producer Russell DeShiel, also lead guitarist on the project. He's got a lot of technical skills. He did all the engineering for the project, beside from playing lead guitar. So I thought the moves were obvious to me, and we made them, and he agreed, and then we had it mastered by the great George Horn. Known him for 50 years,
yeah.
Terrific guy, and now here we are, have a record coming out, and on my birthday here, we've got a couple singles out right now, came out on the 10th, on Good Friday. I hope it was good for rock and roll.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
And so I'm very, very excited about it. It's a project that just got, you know, caught up in what was happening at the moment, and kind of took it out of the game.
I mean,
it's back now.
It's really cool because Wendy had sent me the description of it, and then sent me a copy to kind of listen through. So I listened through it once, and then I listened through it again a second time, and it's not kind of what I expected from, you know, I'm thinking Creedence in my head. It's got a totally different vibe. It's got a lot of different vibes. It's got some Southern in it, but then it's got almost like, to me, I was getting some Traveling Wilburys vibes in it. I got, like, you know, there's some pop songs, but then there's some funk too. Like, when you were recording that at that time, were you just saying, like, hey, I'm just going to do various styles and see what comes out? Or what was it, like a collaboration with people and each one kind of, you know, each one formed its own sound?
Well, it was kind of a combination of those two things. I went with the best songs that we had. So I collaborated on four songs with Rob Polomsky. He was a local guy, so I could see him every day. We wrote a lot of songs together. Mm-hmm. And then Chris Solberg, I wrote two songs with him on that project. And then Russell, I wrote one song with. So, and then three songs I wrote by myself. So there was quite a few different points of view and that sort of thing. And then the songwriting process, you know, you go with what makes you excited, whatever gives you that spark, you go in that direction. So it wasn't. It wasn't really planned out to be a smorgasbord, but it turned out that way.
See, but I like that. I like the variety in the album.
Well, yeah, and, you know, otherwise there would be a lot of songs like mm-hmm. South Side Band. That's my little resume. This is what I used to do. In a pretty good band, so you know, I'm happy with the drum parts.
Now, this is your second solo album. I know back in '72 you did Cosmo. What's the difference between the two, as in either the music or how you felt going into either project?
Well, the first album was really an experiment. We had Creedence had broken up, and we had the Cosmos Factory as our business operation, and we had a big area where we would rehearse, high ceilings, rugs, that sort of thing, tall curtains on either side. It had a good sound for rehearsing, but we didn't know about the possibility of recording. Stu and I and Russ Gary, who was the engineer on Green River album On, wanted to have a production company. So we thought if we had a remote vehicle which was starting to come on the market. There was none in the Bay Area, but there was some in L.A. We could rent that out, and that would give us capital to work with bands that we wanted to record. So that was what it was all about. I also had a budget, so you know I wasn't going to be coming out of my pocket, and I always loved horns, and even as a kid, all the stuff I bought, most of it had horns in it. Little Richard, Fats Domino, James Brown, etc. You know, the R&B side of it.
Mm-hmm.
So I got the Tower Power horns, and Donald Duck Dunn was an old friend of mine. I always wanted to do a project with him, so he played bass. Stu played rhythm guitar. He always wanted to do that. So it was kind of a fun thing. I didn't spend a lot of time on the writing. I didn't spend a lot of time on the vocals. As I say, it was an experiment. The difference between this album that we're talking about now, the one that's out now,
yep,
or almost out now, I was the artist and songwriter and producer of the project, and it put a lot more hats on the hat rack, let's put it that way. But when you have people like Russell and Chris Solberg at your side, it really took a lot of pressure off. I just said, you know, if you guys hear something that you think has value, let me know. So we did that, and everything went along great, and then I put it away.
30 years later, 35 years later, right? It's 85.
35, yeah. Wow.
Unbelievable.
35.
Yeah. I mean, is it funny, like, when you do listen to the masters of this or kind of forget about music you wrote, and do you, like, what is the feeling listening to it? Like, as you listen through, or is it all coming back to you the first time, or do some of these, like, seem completely foreign to you still?
Well, no, they all became, you know, it was immediate recognition.
It's like being reunited with an old friend, right?
Yeah, I went, holy crap, yeah. this stuff is pretty good.
I love that.
What the hell was wrong? Why didn't I do something with it? But, you know, as I said, you know, life and all of those things. So I saved it until I was in my mid-70s. It's kind of a nice dessert, if you will.
Well, one of the reasons I ask, like, you know, I was doing a little reading on you, and like when Creedence had hit, you know, and signed, you were a junior in high school, correct?
When we did what?
When you guys got signed, were you a junior in high school at the time?
I think so. Yeah, when we got signed, we started the band when we were 13,
I mean, when you look back and you say that you've been playing, the amount of music you have played over the years, and, you know, 50-something years, does that ever seem, like, overwhelming to you? Do you believe that? Does it feel like it's been that long, or does it feel like just yesterday you started?
Well, you know, really, it's kind of a combination of any and all of that mm-hmm. that sort of thing. It encompasses so many years. And the result was a tremendous legacy of music. John Fogerty wrote some amazing songs, and in those days he had a killer voice. So
yes.
You know, it was a nice combination. We learned to play our instruments together, and at the same time. Learned to record. We were, thanks to Tom, he took us in the studio, and we were like 14 years old, and we recorded.
That's unbelievable.
Until we had a hit, you know, which was in 1968. So, it gives us, people say, well, how did you get that sound? Well, we got that sound by growing up together and becoming a unit. early on to, you know, to strengthen us and behind the encouragement of Tom and supported him and got in. There were hardly any recording facilities around.
Right.
And so getting in as early as we did was a big, big bonus for us.
I'm sure as a kid at 14, you probably don't even understand, like, you know, the whole process. You're still learning on the kind of learning on the job, if you will.
Well, yeah, that's what we did. You know, it took us 10 years to have our first hit, but once we did, then we accelerated. You know, putting out three albums in 1969, for example, and then touring behind them. You know, we were very, very, very busy boys. One of the main reasons that we were able to complete the task was we were a straight and sober band. We made a pact early on that drugs and alcohol would not be part of the band. You know, if you did something after, you know, when the show was over or you're in your living room, whatever. You know, there was some pretty good weed out there in those days, but that was not ever used, even in a daily routine where you might be looking to write some songs. So we jammed a lot. We would jam during those periods, and you know, John would get ideas, material, and so that was that process. We never did. We drank coffee.
Rebels.
I had to pee quite often during rehearsal.
I mean, that's just incredible. I mean, starting from such an early age and had the maturity of you guys to, because I'm sure like people going backstage or like before the show, hey man, try this or do that, and had the maturity to keep the love in the music and all. I mean, what do you think drove you that way? Were you guys just that dedicated, or did you have like good management to kind of say, guys, this is not a guarantee, you got to keep focus and make this music?
Well, it was we went to the Fillmore Auditorium, which was the big venue in San Francisco, Bill Graham's venue, and we were starving at that time. We were full time, playing in bars and not making much money, and having to, you know, use Tom's credit cards and stretch them out until we needed it. We got a sheriff's wing and then put a little money on it. We were literally poor.
Yeah.
But we wanted to go see what the other bands were doing, and so we went to a show at the Fillmore that had the Jefferson Airplane and the Grateful Dead, and the Grateful Dead played, and I just hate to say it, but you know, they were more about getting, they were the opposite of us. It was more about getting stoned, being a cult, you know. And when they left the stage, we're saying, "Oh man, that's the best we've ever played." And we're looking at each other and going, "That's the worst I've ever paid money to go see." And so we put our hands in to, you know, we're sitting on the floor of the Fillmore, you know, the notorious Fillmore, and we made the pact. And if the music doesn't make us high, we're in the wrong business. So it kept the ship moving in the direction that we wanted it to go. And it never really missed anything. And the music did get us high, still does. This album, I'm just kind of going, whoa.
So awesome.
Holy crap. That's beautiful. You know? Music is a wonderful thing. It's a gift, and you know, we've been fortunate to have our dreams come true. Revisited, Stu Kirk, 25 years.
We were lucky. You kind of led me into my next. We were lucky enough to have Stu on about, I want to say maybe about a year ago. Maybe a year and a half. Just a great, great guy. Great interview, and you know, like I'm not just saying this, but you know, I grew up and my dad would be blasting CCR. And then I got into CCR. And it's a timeless, like, music that is just, like, Americana. Like, I don't think you guys, you go to Creedence Revisited or Fogerty concerts, there's still young people coming out to these shows and being really into this music. What do you think it is about those songs that, honestly, they're timeless? They really are.
Well, again, you know, is something that we spent a lot of time on. Less is best. In other words, if you have you put a note in, it's got to have at least the same value as the note around it or notes around it.
Yeah.
And hopefully, something that, you know, is even brings you a little to a peak, if you will. And that's, you know, that's for young guys. You want to play, all over the place, you know, and that's one of the things that we were able to take care of, you know. That's why we had 2.5 minute songs. We had everything that we wanted to say. And so there you go. We'll put it together another song to continue the conversation. So, you know, that's a good school, I think, to go to, especially if you're going to play roots American music.
Go ahead, Mike.
I mean, I could easily, like, list any hit song that you guys done amount of time. I mean, it's just phenomenal. But I'm just kind of curious, was there ever a song that you guys did that you either, like, loved playing or loved listening to where you're like, man, when people talk to me, they never bring up the song, and I just absolutely love everything about it?
Not really so much that, but I think about Born on the Bayou. I listen to it on occasion, and that to me is my favorite.
Great song,
Creedence song, and it you know, it really says everything that we embodied. You know, a quarter note beat, which was Susie Q was a quarter note beat as well. It wasn't like the rockabilly version of it when, you know, that was a hit 10 years before. That created that. We were playing the clubs and five sets a night, six nights a week, and material got to be a little sketchy.
Yeah.
So, you know, in the clubs, they want people to dance because they sweat, and when they sweat, they buy beer. So that's how the level of business in the bar scenes. I came up with a quarter note beat, and then had the accents on the bass drum, and it just opens up. You know, when you're not playing that's the eighth note feel, and the quarter note feel is.
Right.
It just opens up, and then the guitars just sort of come out like a monster because there's room, and then you set it up I set up the backbeat 2 and 4 on the snare drum, and it just creates a groove there, and it's Stewie's bass and Tom's rhythm guitar, and you know it's a fun thing. So
yeah.
Born on the Bayou is that quarter note feel is one of my favorites. And
here's a testament to you guys. You say Born on the Bayou, immediately I'm singing it in my head as you're talking to me. Like I have it in my head. You know
what
I mean?
Absolutely.
You know.
Absolutely.
So when we had Stu on, one of the you see nowadays. I mean. God, during this pandemic, not so much. But nowadays, festivals, like big music festivals, are growing and growing, and they're getting more and more popular, whether it's your Bonnaroos or your, you know, whatever it is, all over England, all over the United States. And you guys, you got to perform at essentially the one that everyone, you know, looks at and kind of, it's just held in the highest regard and one of the most amazing things that happened in American music. You performed in Woodstock. I'd just be curious at your take on what what that was like for you being so young, and what you're taking now, like looking back on what a influential moment that was in kind of the evolution of music at that time.
Well, it was a logistical nightmare for us. You know, we got in on a little bubble top helicopter, a two-man helicopter, became a three-man helicopter. And so that's how it started. And you know, it had been raining, and you know, we were late, and the show was running behind and way behind, and we were supposed to be the headliner on Saturday night. We ended up Sunday morning at like 1-2 in the morning. I'm not really sure. So we were trying to, you know, find our guys, get our gear together. Trying to find somebody that had some sort of knowledge or you know, somebody who was part of the people that put it on, and they were most of them were pretty wrecked, so
yeah.
Another problem, but you know, we ultimately were able to get up on stage and go through a lot of the problems that rain had caused, electronics and rain. Not a great match.
No.
You know? And have you ever seen the rain? We sure did that night. But Credence humor there. But we were able to, you know, get through it. And while we were on stage, it was totally black out there. There was no lights, barely any on stage.
Wow.
If you see the video, it's dark up there. So that's what we had to work with. And, you know, we did our thing and got out alive and made it to our gig the next night in New Jersey.
Yeah. All right.
Wow.
When you were playing and when you guys were doing that, were you aware, or did you have that feeling of the impact of that concert, or what was out there, or what was going on, or was it like more you were so caught up in the moment that you really didn't get to, you know, kind of feel what that was?
Well, I was able to feel what it was, and this is,
it's amazing.
Earlier. Before you know, we played, and to see people having so much fun and terrible conditions. People were wet, cold, no food, no potable water. I mean, and perfect strangers shared whatever they had with other perfect strangers. There was no violence. It was all about you know, what it was supposed to be.
Yes.
And to put people in miserable conditions to enjoy themselves for 3 days and three nights. Unbelievable. The hair stood up. At one point, you know, I was busy running around trying to get this and do that. And then I said, wait a minute. Look what's going on here. There's like 400,000 people here.
Sick.
And nobody's, no, there's no riot. There's no, you know, they're perfectly happy to be where they are at that moment. And that, to me, I'll never forget it.
Awesome.
It'll never happen again.
Unfortunately.
And
not with the right intentions anyway. It'll definitely not happen.
Oh yeah. No. Well, the 25th anniversary,
yeah.
They had everything in abundance, but people thought they were charging too much, so they rioted,
yep.
Burned the stage down, yep. and stopped the show. That doesn't sound like the Woodstock.
No. fires, abuse, destruction. Yep. Yeah. Awful. Yep.
Doug, I mean, you've been at this for such a long time and done so many amazing things. Thinking back to like when you saw the Beatles on Ed Sullivan and you went out and bought Beatle wigs. I'm just wondering, like, as you've been going along this journey, are you like ever at all, do you ever like just sit back and go, I can't believe this is happening? Or are you so enthroned with like just putting on a good show and making good music that it's just another day and you're enjoying life?
Well, again, I'd say it's probably a little of both. You know, it's an amazing thing that, you know, 13-year-olds had this dream, and our dream was to someday have our songs played on the radio. Right. Well, it's 52 plus years now, and they're still playing them. So, and then for us to be with, we visited for 25 years,
yep,
in touring, be a touring band going out every single year, you know, from probably January to November. Now, you know, that's, and having, as you said earlier, a young crowd. I mean, we have three generations of fans, and I see a fourth emerging. I call them single digiters, 7, 8, 9-year-olds.
I got a kid on the way, Doug, and I will be playing Creedence for it. So
excellent. Yeah. Excellent. make sure Bayou gets in there early. want him to have the maximum Creedence experience.
Doug, it's been like a, to me, it's surreal right now. And I know for you, it's just, you know, guys calling about your new album went up, but like, you know, you've been soundtracked in the back of my life and my parents' life and whatnot for a very long time. And I want to thank you so much for giving us some time on the show, and it really is appreciated. And I think the new album is really cool, and I think people should hear it. So before we go, I have kind of like a two-part question. One, tell us where someone who is listening to this should go to check out, and what's the best place for them to listen to the new album or go listen to. And two, do you ever, do you ever look back on this and do you think it's do you think it was destiny, or do you think it was hard work, or do you think, like, what do you think, why do you think, you know, you were able to do so much great stuff and musically, and what do you ever plan on stopping doing music?
Oh no,
that's awesome.
Music is like breathing for me. If I give it a look out, I don't think I could live in a world without music. It's a gift, as I said, and it's one that isn't taken lightly. And you know, part of our success includes making millions of people happy around the world. I mean, that, how cool is that? I
mean, for sure.
I think about it all the time, and I'll be in the grocery store, and just about the time I get over the jalapeno peppers, there's a Creedence tune. I'll be 75 and like, I don't know, 10 days, whatever. And I still get the rush of it. And, you know, it's the same with playing, you know, concerts, you know, I always try to do everything I can to give my best performance, and every time, every single time, we count the downbeat, the Born on the Bayou is our opening song. I get the adrenaline rush. I still do.
That's awesome.
And if I ever didn't get it, then I would be done. Well, I'm done now, but I'm. You know, the last show we played, I had the same thing, the adrenaline rush, and that's very cool. But there's a time and for everything. I have Parkinson's disease; it's coming on. I don't want to be on a stage somewhere, and not be able to finish. That's part of it. I was still playing at a pretty high level when we stopped. But also, I have 5 grandkids. I've got a wife, we just had our 52nd anniversary, and so I've got other things in my life, and I've been on the road, and it's just tough on your body, it really,
right,
really beats you up, and so I'm ready to do this, and lo and behold, I have another gift with this record.
For sure.
Something that I didn't know I had for 35 years.
Yeah.
So, you go, wow.
It's like a son you had on the road and you forgot about.
Sounds like a great setup for that show, Storage Wars. Like he just lets it go by, and then like somebody opens up, and it's like, oh,
wow,
yeah, Storage Wars. Well, I'm glad I got there first.
So, Don, real quick, what's the album called, and where's the best place for them to go get it, Doug?
Well, of course, downloads are what are happening now, but I do plan to have vinyl down the line. But it's Magic Window is the name of the song. My recording studio in my house in Lake Tahoe was up on above a three-car garage. It was a 1,000-square-foot room, and it had all full glass windows looking out over Lake Tahoe from 1,000 feet above the lake. And it's a pretty inspirational place, and the result is this record, plus some other projects that I had in there. I recorded the Texas Tornadoes with Doug Somm up in that room. I still have those tapes that haven't been released.
Yes,
I've got other tapes that I have with bands that I was in, and so I've got about 100 songs that came out of the locker, so to speak. And so I've got a life's worth of work ahead of me as a songwriter / publicist. So I'll be working my publishing and putting out these tunes and enjoying being off the hectic path of the road.
Love it. Doug, I want to thank you so much for giving us time today. And you know, your music's been playing before I was born, during when I was born. It'll be played long after that. And you are it was a really fantastic interview, and I really want to thank you for giving us some time today.
Honor.
Oh, pleasure's mine, guys. I enjoyed the time. You know, it's again, as I say, it's a gift, and having all these fans is a gift, and it's just been an amazing ride, and I'm going to take it until it's over.
Last thing, Doug, you still have any of those Beatle wigs?
No.
Doug, thanks so much. Take care. Be safe during all this, and thank you again. It really made our night.
Well, you guys stay safe. You know, this pandemic is a very strange thing in life, and there's nothing like music to help. It's medicinal. You know, it's you can. I do anyway. When I'm it's great. When I'm down, it's great. It reaches a hand down and picks me back up. So, the music's done that for me all my life, and that's probably why I ended up with a career in it. And just thank my lucky stars that it's been so great.
Same for us, man. It's been amazing to like interview one of your, you know, something you've been listening to forever. So thank you so much, Doug.
Thanks, guys.
All right, Berlo. Definitely the best Doug to ever be on the show.
Now you got to make me look up certain people. I know the obvious answer, but I'm trying to find somebody else so we don't promote that other Doug that's been on the show.
Man, like I even messaged you during this interview because, you know, we're doing the old Google Hangout or Zoom or whatever you want to call it. And I said, you know, when you think that we have someone from Creedence Clearwater on this stupid little podcast that we basically have been doing for a long, long time, it's pretty incredible. So, you know, it's like I said on the intro, it's Creedence Clearwater, Revival, Revisit, whatever. Those songs are in the genetic fabric of America. Exactly. He's right. He's like, he's, you know, when he was saying he was in the pepper section and he hears Born on a Bayou, whatever. It's like, it's true. You know, it's on someone's stereo. It's at a party. It comes on. It's, And when I saw John Fogerty last year, last summer or summer, whatever, a year or two ago, young fans there, like teenagers, 20-year-olds. It's music that's transcendent through, you know, generation after generation, and long after Doug's gone and long after we're gone. I really think they're like a band that will always be popular.
Yeah, I mean, just hearing like the Stu interview and the one tonight, you can clearly see it was never a job. It was a love. And it's such a key with anything or anybody we talk to. That's why we say, like, it's amazing as it is to get somebody from Creedence and all the other guests that we had. We really do try to find like the most enthusiastic people for this show, and the stories that come out are amazing. And it's just amazing how you're talking about a Hall of Fame band with endless crazy hits.
I could put on 15 songs in a row on Creedence, and you would know like all of them.
Absolutely. And it hits you in the heart, actually. I mean, as weird as that, not to get emotional, but it's just like,
for sure,
that's a person who loved his art, who continues to love his art, and he will literally go to his maker saying, "I gave all I can for music."
And that's it, man. It's like, it's just like when I plan on dying, like maybe next week while we're podcasting, you're gonna be like, "He gave it all for this."
Absolutely.
And everyone's gonna be like, "For what?" Wait, what was that thing called?
Nobody at the funeral. He had a podcast. What is that? What he kept on putting up on Instagram?
It was called.
I'm wondering why he used that weird freaking name.
It was called Verbal Phenomenons. guys.
And by the way, I looked it up. Yes, we only had one other Doug, and he is the better Doug.
Oh God!
So,
guys, when I say, I always say the one and only whoever, you know, but really the one and only Doug Clifford, guys. All right, Berlew. Doug Clifford, man.
Man, Hall of Famer, just all around amazing guy. Kind of humbling doing this sometimes, you know?
Yeah, it's weird. I, you know, you do this thing. Essentially, it's always been for fun. We had a sponsor here and there. But would we love to do this? Absolutely. Please get us out of our day job. Someone out there listening. But we do that just more for the adventure, really, and kind of the hunt and to talk to like people. And it's always been that. It's been that for a long time anyway. And it's like, you know, like you're going to listen to Proud Mary the next time that comes on the radio. You're going to be like, oh man, you hear this song? You hear this song, Izzy? Like, I had the drummer, you know, of the band, of this band on, you know?
Yeah.
And it's weird. There's all sorts of these podcast intersections, if you will, that have happened in my life and your life. I mean, we've talked about it before, but, you know, it's arguable, or maybe destiny. I was talking with my wife today on a walk, and it's like, we were talking about, like, how do we end up in the community we are? And if we didn't do this, and if we didn't meet each other, where would it would be? I mean, Berlew, we talked about it, like, it's a possibility you would have never met your wife if, you know, you never know. Or you never would have got together or taken that next step. Or we never would have talked to this person if we didn't talk to this guy. Like, it's just, there's a million things. Like, you even had something recently.
Oh, yeah. So if you recall in the last episode, I think we talked about it. I talked about how we lucked out that some tornadoes that hit Georgia slipped by and didn't hit myself or my parents. Like, the ones that went north were northern of me. The ones that went south were southern of my dad.
Yeah.
But if you go back to episode 132 entitled Curious George, we interviewed
great
George
title.
Koronis.
Great title.
Absolutely. but we interviewed George Koronis, who really fascinating guy. I highly recommend checking out the interview. Like, He was a volcano explorer. He went into like a volcano to light a torch for like a Burger King commercial, if I recall.
Yeah, yeah. I think I remember him talking about like rowing like a little raft in the volcano because everything else would melt or something. Like, it's something crazy.
Yeah, and he works for Nat Geo, so he's also he looks after like extreme weather and stuff like that. So I'm Facebook friends with him, and when like these tornadoes were being talked about, there was always like, oh, it's a warning, it's going in the Georgia area, but nothing where it's like, all right, I gotta be super prepared to then okay being concerned. Because I mean, maybe it's the Jersey in me, like Jersey, other than like Sandy, most of the like hurricanes that came through, it's like, yeah, yeah, whatever.
They're just storms. The blowout.
Yeah, we got a little extra rain, maybe some branches on the ground, but you don't blink an eye to it.
Yeah.
So I'm on the bed and I'm looking through my Facebook, and he's basically saying on there, he's like, have you guys, not saying it to me, but on his post, he's like, man, you people got to check out.
That'd be great if he was tornadoes. Saying it to you. He's like, hey, Michael Berlew, move.
He's like, listen, I can't make it over there. Can you take a picture with your iPhone and send it to me before your house gets swarmed away? But he's literally talking about, he's like, everybody, you got to keep an eye out on these tornadoes, and unbelievable. It's like he was listening. Once they were going from like 170 miles an hour to 232 Jeez. Miles an hour, wow. Going through Mississippi. He's like, these are some of the most amazing tornadoes on record. And I'm sitting back saying, okay, he's a tornado expert. He's not like,
yeah,
he's not like some old person saying, oh, my knee's hurting, better be careful about the weather coming up. And that was the first time I actually said, oh crap, I might want to do something.
Yeah.
That was a moment of like, honey, I gotta get the car into the garage. We gotta move the grill in there. We put everything in there. Maybe we'll have to sleep in the basement tonight.
And that's when you told your wife to sleep in the garage. You're like, you gotta sleep here. I gotta take care of things. Yeah. The best night of sleep.
The car. I'll be in the basement with the dog and cat snuggling watching TV. No, don't turn off the
Yeah, I mean, we talked about a couple episodes ago. It's the same way we emailed the hippo attack survivor, and the representative of him turned out to get us like 10, 15 more guests after that. So it's really cool. I like to play that game in life sometimes where you're like, where am I? How did I get here? What would be different if I made different decisions? I always like to do that. And I guess that's very like esoteric of me, if you will, or whatever. But I'm very like, I like to be like, well, if I made a wrong decision, would I be in this neighborhood? Would I be somewhere else? Would I be single? Would I be, you know, whatever it is. I like to think like that because it's fun to play like steps in life, like where you would be.
What do you think would be the one thing where you say, if this happened or did not happen, pretty much chaos in your life are the most
that's easy for me. That's easy for me, and I don't want to sound like a softy. If I had not met my wife when I did and when we were together for about 4 years before we got married or whatever. When that was all going down in my life, like, you know, I was divorced and whatnot and alone and working my ass off and still trying to figure out ways to be creative. Mike, arguably, like, that's kind of the reason I may have met you, you know, like I was kind of seeking something else in my life, which was comedy and trying to get back into comedy and doing it again, and went down to the Comedy Cove and worked on Johnny Watson's show and met you and, one night drunkenly called you from Philly, like, I'm doing a podcast and I need a co-host, and I thought you would be a good co-host. And I thought, like, on the Watson show, you were frustrated and kind of sat there. And I was like, I just need you. All I remember was like being like, I need you to talk, Mike. I just want you to talk. That's all I want you to do. Like, I don't want to be like, You're the sound guy or something like that.
I remember that conversation. I think you said, you got to talk. Yeah, okay. No, you don't understand. You need to talk, okay?
Yep.
I need you to talk. I think you put it in there like 7 or 8 times. Yeah. That's why I keep on joking with you. I'm like, dude, I wait for the call the next day to verify.
Yeah.
That was an actual offer.
That was a bachelor party, too. I was at a bachelor party that night. Mm-hmm. And I remember it was just eating away at me. I'm like, I'm doing this stupid little podcast a couple episodes in. And I'm like, I need a guy who, you know, because we worked together setting things up a lot. I came in, I was doing the sound. You were doing the internet and the, you know, the phone calls coming in and whatnot. And I think it became fairly... Very clear. We were first to arrive, last to leave. The one setting up, the one taking care, and really not doing much, like as far as the actual show and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember thinking that, and I was like, "Well, you know what? Like, I can't be. The podcast's not really exciting by unless you're Bill Burr or Theo Vaughn or something. Like a podcast by yourself is really hard to be entertaining. Like." Even if you have someone to just say, yeah, and ask questions, like, it's better than, like, nothing. You know what I mean?
I couldn't fathom listening to a single person chat for more than
Bill Burr's the only guy, I think, that pulls it off because he does it somehow. He does it. He takes, like, listener emails and, you know, just rants on them. He's also a super genius comedian. He will be possibly in the Mount Rushmore when he's done. But anyway. So I remember calling you, and so that had happened. So I guess it's a two-part answer for me, Mike. You said things that would change. So I guess the divorce would be one thing, and I'm so grateful that happened because it completely altered the orbit of this planet. You know, and then it caused me to go out there and try to meet someone else. And you got to remember, I was with my ex for 7, 8 years or whatever it was. I didn't really have any dating experience. I went on a couple Tinder dates and whatnot, and then I met my wife, and it's really changed everything since.
Shit. So what you're saying is you really wish you picked Tinder date number 2 over Alex.
Okay, gotcha.
Correct.
Yeah, that...
It didn't help that you were Tinder date number 2, but...
Well, I mean, I'm sorry it didn't put out, but, you know, I have standards. You gotta wine and dine me at least 3 times. You know the rule.
What about you?
I think it is getting let go of my previous job.
Okay.
Because I feel if they didn't fire me and I couldn't find something else, I would have still been there.
Yep.
Would have still been miserable.
Yep.
I don't know what kind of personality I would have been, either doing the show, how I've been around my wife.
There was a point in the show where I felt it from you. There was a point where I felt you were always good during the interviews, but I felt during the talking part you were always kind of like there was stuff weighing on you.
Yeah. Totally checked out. I mean, I could totally see myself still being in that apartment in New Jersey, probably somewhere in my top weight, maybe more. I was thinking it was like at 250 at one point. So I could imagine totally being like 250, 260, 270.
Yeah.
Probably just like in that apartment, miserable, whether Izzy's a part of my life or not. No offense to her, but...
I get it.
Could totally see like huge depression off of there. And I mean, even like being in Jersey now with like the pandemic, like I said, if she's not there, then I'm in my apartment alone, quarantined, basically not talking to people. So let's...
Yeah. Because I noticed the point, it was like we were doing really well with the cast, and there was that initial excitement of getting guests and getting things and doing it. And then I think your job really took a turn somewhere and was like, wow, this is not fun. And I think you were just very much in a, I don't know, like trying to find something kind of mode, like trying to, or trying to just get through the day kind of mode where like everything was just kind of like, yeah, all right, whatever. Yeah, okay, that's cool. Like, yeah, we'll do it. Like, and then I think somewhere, somewhere not when you left, somewhere slightly before you left for Georgia, probably a couple months before you left, I saw you starting to like return and get interested, and like you were like, there's a little bit more spark back, and then like we had John Schneider on, and I remember that being like kind of this bittersweet thing, like, because we never knew, we didn't really know what was going to become of this thing. I know I'm talking in cast, but the cast is kind of like a documentary of our lives in a way, you know, it's kind of like a notebook because it's like different stages of your life, you know?
Yeah, and I even remember the first one we did when I was remote. Like, I used the phone, and there was horrible cell reception there. That was the Sunny parents on that episode. But, like, I remember it was, like, really bad. Even when we figured out, like, all right, maybe I could talk over the internet. The internet was kind of horrible. Yeah. We were getting the beatbox burlew of
yep, like a and lot getting, too. Yep,
it was getting constant, so there was a lot of questions there. So, yeah, I mean, I guess as each step in the line came together and all, it's what did we become? But I would probably say, yeah, if I didn't get released from the job, I'd probably still be there and probably be one miserable mofo.
Yeah. I think somewhere along the line of the last year and a half, our podcast has never been better. I truly believe that it's been better than the initial days because we were figuring it out back then, like what formula worked. And then I thought there was like a time period where it's like we were going through the motions, but somewhere around the last year and a half or whatnot, like the people we talked to and the things we've done and the way we figured out the format and whatnot, whether it works for anyone else, it works for us. And I feel like the podcast has never been better this year. It's like, it's always like, it gets like, there's always a couple of weeks where we're like, oh, we got so many guests, and you're like, oh crap, we got to do three tonight or whatever it is. And then you'll have an interview and you're like, that was amazing. Like, what am I complaining about? I'm sitting in my house, you know, sitting in my house doing what I want, like not sitting there just vegging in front of a TV, and I'm doing something that's interesting and talking to someone who I have no business talking to. And it's like, you know, you gotta take that in stride. Like, this is pretty cool, man. Like 300 something episodes or close to it. We're doing big. Like, look at tonight's episode. We're talking to someone who played at goddamn Woodstock, man.
Yep, we came a long way from the Ghost Cast, Scott.
We did. Whether she's alive or not.
You know, why don't we dive into that quickly? Because we never talked about that. We had like a 3-week stint where there was nothing but death stories, and this is pre this outbreak.
Okay. Yep.
So to get into the grass, so like, let's start with like December. I mean, I think I told the story in the following year, but in December, as we were talking about the place I hated to work at, they found a dead body behind my old office.
Correct.
At the company.
Yep. We talked about that one. Yep. Dead body.
Yeah. And then the guy was a suicide for what it looked like. It was nothing or nobody knew from that. Then we had, I went on my vacation, and the wife got the call. Somebody contacted my wife about somebody dying, which we'll get back. We'll reference back to in 1 minute, which became the second time we went on a Disney vacation and somebody contacted my wife about somebody dying.
Yep.
Because when we went on our first trip, basically somebody contacted her to say her ex-husband died.
Well, it's proof that when you go on Disney trips, they, in order for them to keep their deal with Satan, they have to kill one person every time someone goes there.
Yeah, true. Right. True. They didn't they didn't take care of somebody in February, so Devil's like, oh, now I got to teach you something.
It's the rule of Disney. They sold their soul for the devil. So
yeah. So then, like, as part of the Disney trip, it was a Disney cruise. While we were in the Bahamas, we apparently found out that an older gentleman passed away on the trip, which made it the second time I've left the country to a story about somebody dying, because the last country I was in other than America was India,
right,
where I had a story where we were at the Great Buddha statue, and they let us off to take pictures, and there was a big gathering on the other side of the bridge, and a guy came up to me and said, "You see that over there?" I'm like, "Yeah, it looks like a brown beach ball." He's like, "That's a dead body."
Yeah. Yep.
And when I thought he's just joking, I walked up, and the beach ball was wearing a flannel shirt. So, yeah. So that's two in a row right there. And then on top of that, I think it was about a month ago, we were going to have a guest on there. I'm not going to reveal the guest just yet because we'll talk about it when we interview him. But we basically had to reschedule because the movie that he did, the person he documented, died in a plane crash.
Yeah.
Or
yep.
A rocket crash. We had the interview for Monday. The guy died on a Saturday.
So. Yeah. Yeah. So, I'm going to speak to this without using names, just out of possible respect.
Yeah.
Not that there was much left. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But okay. So years ago, we did a podcast, we called the Ghost Cast, which was from an old vape shop that was supposedly haunted. It was an old house that was supposedly haunted. We did the Ouija board thing. Honestly, nothing really happened. Nothing really crazy happened.
No noises. They were references to, well, when you shut the lights off, you can see like an outline of somebody or whatever, but we didn't see anything. In fact, if I recall, you actually wanted to bring a Ouija, and they kind of said, no, you don't want to disturb anything. So.
Right, we don't shake the spirits. We had the guy on who really talked about what was going on. So the comic who brought us on there, well, she was full of crap for a long time in a lot of things. Like, not a particularly amazing comic. She tried to steal shows from me, blah, 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 blah. We're not getting into that much. So the rumor is, and maybe if you're alive, please email me. I'll take this episode down. The rumor, so she had passed away tragically a couple months ago, and it was, you know, listen, people have history with people. You never wish that on your, you know, your worst enemy. And the person apparently died, blah, blah, blah. Terrible, sad, you know, what a loss. People are posting about her and great comic on it. There's a rumor out there that I get a text with a comic I talked to. Hey, did you hear about blah, blah, blah? There's a big rumor she might be alive still. And she owed a lot of money and went somewhere to get away from all these debt collectors and tried to fake her own death.
Yeah, because at least from stories I'm hearing, number one, on Facebook, the only reference anybody has is on her Facebook page, a post that says, "Hey, I'm blah blah's daughter.
Yep.
FYI, mom died last night."
Right.
There was no wake.
Nope.
There was no funeral.
Nope.
There was no sight of where they were buried or cremated.
And let's throw it out there. This person is crazy enough to pull this off. If there was a person you could pick out of the people you know, you'd be like, yeah, that person could be the one to try to do something like this.
100%. I mean, in dealings with her, very sporadic, very weird. I don't want to use something like bipolar, but she definitely, her just when it comes into stuff, she's a very panicky and changes tones, and it's very hard to work with that person.
Yeah.
And adding to the story is the fact that apparently they were having a comedian was setting up a tribute show in New York City for her. And then once the rumors started getting out there, the show was immediately taken off the air because of the fact that, just to kind of tell you, like, even people who know her and wanted to give a tribute to her heard the story and kind of said, yeah, I could see that. We're not doing the tribute show.
Yeah. So, but I don't know if we've ever had a guest that died before. She might be the first, or possibly the first. Either way, she'll either be maybe our first dead guest. No, have we had a dead guest? I'm not sure.
I've looked around. I haven't heard anything from any of our guests, so.
Well, it'd be weird if you did hear something from them. Like, hey, yeah. I'm dead now. I would love to come back on your show. But
really? Can we talk to you? No, I just wanted to tell you I'm doing other podcasts now. I'm dead.
I don't think we've had a dead guest. So either way, she's going to be the first dead guest or the first to fake their death guest that we've ever had on the show. But
I know we've tried to get some people on and had to give up because of death, but
yes,
not an actual person who come on here and died.
Yeah. So yeah, that's kind of how this podcast goes. So another great week in the books. We could do a million things. I had something. I'll save it for next time. Which, you know, we're putting out episodes every couple of days here, so I'll save it and you can digest this amazing episode. I want to, before we go, Berto, I want to thank. I want to thank Doug Clifford, Cosmo Clifford, for coming on the show. Fantastic interview. Really pinnacle moment here. Another thing I really never thought would happen, or something like that would happen. So thank you, Doug. Berlew, anything before we go?
I guess I will keep up with the small business promotions here. I'm going to do Hopsticks. It's a restaurant brewery in Chamblee, Georgia. I've been there a couple times. They have some amazing Asian-inspired food. They have unique beers inspired by Asian cuisines. Beautiful brewery, beautiful restaurant. Obviously, with everything going on, tough times. But just like most restaurants, they are open for takeout. So I highly recommend their food there. I've had some of their Asian-inspired tacos and dumplings. Everything there has been absolutely awesome. So check it out. Their name is Hopsticks, Hopstix, and they're in Chamblee, Georgia.
Awesome. And I will promote something that hasn't come out yet, but a good friend of the show, Mark Rigadonna, hilarious comic, done a lot of projects. Go look him up during this time. He could use his support. He's doing a podcast called Domestic Nomad. And basically, he interviews a lot of artists on how they balance their time with their families and figure it out and why they get into comedy. And he did it for a company at one point, and now he's going to do it on his own. And he interviewed me the other night, and it was a really, really, really cool interview. It was a lot of fun. I'm going to release it whenever we kind of have a moment. I'm going to release it under the Verbal Shenanigans platform too, just to support the podcast coming up, and maybe you could learn things about me you didn't know. Who knows? But go check out Mark Rigadonna, and Domestic Nomad is going to be the name of that podcast. So something to look forward to. So guys, thank you so much for tuning in. Thank you for listening. And if you're hanging with us still, best thing you could do is leave us a review on iTunes or share our podcast with someone who might find it interesting. You got to find Doug interesting if you're listening. I mean, if you're a Creedence fan, you got to share this thing. But we're all over the damn place. We're on every podcast platform you could pretty much imagine. We are on a couple internet radio networks. We're on the BS Podcast Network. And you can check us out pretty much all over the place and support us, whether it be Denville Radio or comingrightup.org or Brewer. What's the new one we're on?
RTF Sports Podcasters.
RTF Sports Podcast, another place that supports our cast and puts our content out there. So, guys, life is funny. Laugh at it. Keep the wind at your back. I will see you down on the bayou.
Bye-bye.